Now, just a brief reading, please, from chapter 1 again of the Song of Solomon, the Song of Songs, chapter 1, and reading from verse number 7. Verse 7, Tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest, where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon. For why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flocks of thy companions? If thou know not, O thou fairest among women, go thy way forth by the footsteps of the flock, and feed thy kids beside the shepherd's tents. And the Lord will bless his word. We are meditating in this little song during these evenings, just in a simple devotional fashion. If we were interpreting it accurately, I would suppose that the spouse and the song would be a remnant of Israel, particularly in a day to come. But if this remnant of Israel has found language to exalt her Messiah, I don't see why we shouldn't borrow that language. Like as we borrow the language of Isaiah 53, I don't see why we shouldn't borrow the language of the song, because their Messiah is our Savior. And things that can be said about Israel's Messiah can be said about our Savior, the one and the same person. And so we haven't any hesitation, really, as we look at it in this devotional sense. The late John Douglas used to say that we could suck honey from Israel's flowers. And I think maybe that's what we're doing these evenings. Things that belong primarily and strictly to a remnant of Israel, we are borrowing these things and finding some things for ourselves. This evening, we're having a little look at the shepherd and his flock. I want to look at the shepherd first of all, and then to have a look at the flock. And when we come to see the flock, to view the flock, I want to see the footsteps of the flock. I want to look at the fellowship of the flock and to see something about the food of the flock and the responsibility of those that minister to provide food for that hungry flock. But we must look at the shepherd first of all, and there are some lovely things that might be said about the shepherd. The first thing is, of course, that we look up into his face this evening and we call him whom our souls love. We love him this evening for a number of reasons. We love him for more reasons than we can tell. But I want to give you just some of the reasons why we love him and why we might have great confidence in him, in his shepherd care for us. You remember that there are two great shepherd passages in our Bible, one in the Old Testament, one in the New. I'm not saying these are the only ones, but they are great ones. I suppose that the great shepherd passage in the Old Testament would be the 23rd Psalm. We read it on a variety of occasions. It seems that when we're glad, we read it. When we're sad, we read it. It seems that in every circumstance of life, there's something in this little psalm, and principally because it is his shepherd care for us along life's way. When we come to the New Testament, the great shepherd portion there would be John chapter 10. And I like to think that in Psalm 23, David can look up and say, "My shepherd." But in John chapter 10, the shepherd looks down and he says, "My sheep." And there is at once a kind of an affinity, a lovely thing between us. He in the center, we around him. We saying, "My shepherd," and he saying, "My sheep." And as we look into his face, there are indeed reasons why we love the shepherd. We really mean it when we sing, "I have a shepherd, one I love so well." And the reasons why we love him, I think that first of all, is the greatness of his person. And then perhaps we might see the grace of his movements toward us and of what he has been and what he has done. And then we can see something of his glory also, There is greatness and grace and glory in the person of this shepherd, and because we have come to appreciate those things, we love him. My shepherd, says David, and it ought to be pointed out again and again, that David's lovely Psalm 23 does not really begin with a statement. It is rather an exclamation. It doesn't begin with a declaration. It is an exclamation. He doesn't say simply, "The Lord is my shepherd." He does say that in a sense, but literally what David says is this, "Jehovah Rohi, Jehovah Rohi." He says, "Jehovah, my shepherd." And you see, Jesus of John 10 is Jehovah of Psalm 23. And what I shall never understand is the mentality of some in Protestant pulpits who deny the deity of Christ. And in conversation with them, you say to them, "Well, tell me about this shepherd of John chapter 10. Who is this shepherd in John 10? Oh, they say, "But of course it is Jesus." Quite correctly, the shepherd of John 10 is Jesus, Jesus of Nazareth. I say, tell me, you read at times to your parishioners the lovely little Psalm number 23. Would you say that Jesus is the shepherd there? Oh yes, Jesus is the shepherd there. And that is how they apply the lovely psalm to those that mourn, to those that have been bereaved, to those that are sick, to those that are being wed. In such a variety of circumstances, they bring Jesus out of Psalm 23. I say, you know, in Psalm 23, what David does actually, he begins with one of these lovely compound titles of Jehovah, and he says, "Jehovah Rohi, Jehovah is my shepherd." If Jesus of John 10 is the shepherd of Psalm 23, then Jesus of John 10 is Jehovah of Psalm 23. And with that, of course, none of us have any disagreement. We bow and we rejoice in the greatness of it, that the one who is our shepherd is none other than Jehovah of the Old Testament. You know that the major cults deny his deity. They have this in common, that together they deny the deity of Christ. Well, some of them do it outrightly, forthrightly, honestly. Jehovah's Witnesses do. Some of them do it in a rather subtle way, and the Mormons do that in a subtle way. You discover that what they mean by God and what you mean by God, what you mean by deity and what they mean, are two entirely different things, you see. But anyway, they do all deny the deity of Christ. Now, Jehovah is my shepherd. Jehovah, Jesus of John 10, is Jehovah of the Psalm 23. I used to know a big man. I mentioned him recently somewhere. He was a giant of a man, physically and spiritually and mentally, a great man. And he said to me on one occasion, "You know," he said, "you've got to be careful how you ask these people about the deity of Christ." He said, "There is a way of asking. There is a question that you can put to them, which is watertight, and they've got to answer a yes or no." He said, "What I say to them is this when they come to my door with the literature. I say to them, 'Now look, I'll ask you a question, and upon your answer to the question lies whether or not we'll have any further conversation. Our future conversation, or lack of it, will depend upon your answer to my question.'" And he would say, "Jesus of Nazareth, is he Jehovah of eternity or not?" "Oh, no, no," he would say, "I don't want any disputing. I just want an answer to my question." You wouldn't hesitate. You wouldn't have any doubts. Jesus of Nazareth is indeed and in fact Jehovah of eternity. Amen. Therefore, Jesus of John 10 is Jehovah of Psalm 23. And we love him. "Thou whom my soul loveth, Jehovah of the Old Testament." Jehovah is a wee bit difficult for finite minds to define. Mr. Newberry says that the nearest definition in Scripture that we have of it is in Revelation chapter 1. And about verse number 4, What the writer says is this. He says, grace, peace, from him which is, and which was, and which is to come. Three periods of existence, and he not confined to any of them. He who doesn't really have a past, and who doesn't really have a future, but who lives in an eternal now, which I cannot quite understand. But this is the one who is Jehovah, and Jehovah is my shepherd. Now I'll tell you another reason why we love him. For about 1500 years before he came incarnate into our world, he shepherded an unbelieving Israel. You turn a page and you find them grumbling. You turn another page, you find him meeting their needs graciously, and they're rejoicing, and you turn another page and they're grumbling again. And you turn another page and again he has met their need, and you turn another leaf and again you find that they're murmuring and complaining. And so it went on for centuries. It went on like that. But he shepherded them. And my consolation tonight is this, that if sometimes I'm a little bit like Israel, backsliding, being recovered, grumbling, finding him graciously meeting my need, and then find myself mistrusting and doubting again, if I think that sometimes I'm a bit like that nation, I am glad that for 15 centuries he was the shepherd of Israel, and because of that, he can be my shepherd, I can trust him, and I can love him. Now there is another reason. This shepherd is a very strange thing, but it's very beautiful. In the Revelation chapter 7, he is the Lamb. And a strange word at the end of that chapter, the Lamb shall feed them. And that word feed is the word shepherd. The Lamb shall shepherd them. You say that's a kind of a mixing of metaphors. Might be, but our Bible's full of that. You don't worry about that. The Lamb has become my shepherd. Who better, I ask you, to know the needs of the flock than one who has been himself a lamb? He has been here. He has come to Bethlehem. He has moved from there to Nazareth, lived as a boy, grew up through adolescence into young manhood, moved as a man, sometimes a weary man, a tired man, hungry, thirsty. He has gone the way before us. Now he has gone up and he's in the glory, and the Lamb is my shepherd. He knows the path I tread because he has trodden it before me. He knows the way that I take because he has been here. And because he has been here and has lived down here as a man, then I can trust him and I love him. My shepherd, tell me, thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest. This little song of songs is full of him. And one could go through this little song, finding in abundance the reasons why we love him. But think of his greatness in this respect. That little expression, the song of songs. The structure of it, of the words, reminds us of other similar structures. I remember, for instance, that in the book of Daniel, it was said to Daniel by the king, Daniel, he says, your God is a God of God. My shepherd of the Song of Songs is Daniel's God, the God of gods. You remember when Solomon was about to build the house and he was looking for help from the king of Tyre in the provision of materials and of skills. He said something like this. He says, this God who is greater than all the gods, it's like as if reminiscent of Daniel, the expression in Daniel, this God, he says, greater than all the gods, he says, how can I build a house for him whom the heaven of heavens cannot contain? He's the theme of the Song of Songs. He's the God of gods. He fills the heaven of heavens, and they cannot contain him. And if I was to read Solomon's earlier book, the great theme of it is this: vanity of vanities. And he searches earth, and he's looking for satisfaction, for happiness in the things of earth. And again he says, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. But the Christ of the Song of Songs is the answer to the vanity of vanities of Ecclesiastes. And then I come to the New Testament, and I learn that one day he will be acknowledged as King of Kings. And in the same context, he will be acclaimed as Lord of Lords. And I remember a strange expression. When Ham was cursed away back in the book of Genesis, it was said of him that he would be a servant of servants. And there was one who voluntarily became that, a servant of servants. Is it any wonder that we love him? Who is the sweetness of the Song of Songs? Who is the God of gods? Who fills the heaven of heavens and overflows them with his glory? Who is, in fact, as in another portion in our Old Testament, the very Holy of Holies in himself, who is the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, answer to the vanity of vanities, and who became the servant of servants that he might be all that. Tell me, she says, where thou feedest. She's looking for the shepherd and wants to know where she'll find him. It's a wee bit like the language of Mary in the garden. Tell me where thou hast led him. The rabbis said that all holy scripture was holy, but the Song of Songs was the Holy of Holies. And here indeed is a little song filled with the glories and the greatnesses of the shepherd. We love him. There are so many reasons why we love the shepherd. So for that reason, we are grateful to be in his flock. Grace has put us here into the flock. We are, in the language of a lovely psalm, we are the sheep of his pasture. Nice to be in his flock. Grace has put us there. Grace did a lot for us that night of our conversion. Did so much more for us than we knew at the time. All I knew at the time as just a boy simply trusting was that I was saved and my sins were gone. But I didn't know this, that at that moment of conversion, I had become a child in his family, a son in his house, a stone in his building, a member in his body, and a lamb in his flock. All those things happened to me at that moment of conversion, and all by grace he did that, all for me and for you. The flock. One day he said to them, he said, I've got other sheep that don't belong to this fold of Judaism. We shall never quite, without being critical, we shall never quite understand the thinking of the translators of our authorized version. Never understand them. Them also I must bring, and there shall be one fold. No, no, no. There shall be one flock. I have other sheep, he says, they don't belong to this fold. Judaism. They didn't belong to it. These Gentiles at a distance. They didn't belong to old Judaism. But he says, I've got sheep there in Gentiledom. And I've got to bring them, he says. And when I bring them, there'll be one flock and one shepherd. And the one shepherd in the midst of the flock is so different to old Judaism. It has been said that the difference, the main difference between a flock and a fold is this, that the fold has a perimeter wall that keeps the sheep together, but the flock has a central shepherd, attraction in the midst. And he in the midst holds the flock together, and those who love the shepherd, they don't need a perimeter wall. And the other thing is this, that the closer you get to the shepherd, the closer you get to those who are close to him. And it's nice to be near to those who are near to the shepherd. So, she says, tell me where thou feedest. She's interested in the fellowship now, the fellowship of the flock. She says, I want to know where you feed your flock. I want to be there. She says, why should I be as one that turneth aside by the footsteps of evil men? No, no, no. The footsteps of thy companions. Ah, the saints are scattered today. Sadly scattered. And sectarianism, divisions. These have been the masterpiece of one who would divide and destroy, if he could, whatever was of God. And he has spoiled the visible testimony, unity of the flock. He has spoiled it. And mind you, there are some choice sins. But they're happy, apparently, to be in the flocks of devoted men. And some of these men are devoted. But I wouldn't want to be in the flock of the most devoted pastor if I could be in the flock where he is, the shepherd whom I love. She says, I'm looking for the fellowship of the flock. Oh, that we were in such a condition, brethren, that we wouldn't have to tell people where they ought to meet. If only we were in such an attractive condition that people would come to us and say, could we meet with you? That would be better. The fellowship of the flock. One of the other lovely titles of Jehovah, which is of course fairly evident in the Psalm 23, is Jehovah Shalom. He's the Lord of peace. And in that lovely verse in the psalm, we read of waters of quietness and pastures of tender grass. And in the heat of the day, what a tranquil scene is this. The flock at rest in waters of quietness and lying satisfied in pastures of tender grass. Jehovah Shalom is there. This is a delightful scene. She says, where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon? The heat of the day, the burden of the day, and he makes his flock to rest. What a lovely shepherd consideration. The care, the compassion of a shepherd heart, making his flock to rest in the heat of the noonday. The assembly, locally, ought to be that. Because you see, like as there is a flock in a great universal sense, there ought to be a local aspect of it. Same with the house, the building, the bride. There is a local aspect, a local enjoyment of all of these things. And locally, it's nice to be with the sheep, with the shepherd there in the midst. And he's calling you, if it might be in this company, there is one who still would be in the flock of some devoted servant. Leave it, He's calling you. He calls his own sheep by name and wants them to be where he is in that testimonial way. And he called his own sheep by name right at the very early, in the early days, the beginnings of his ministry. And he called them Andrew, John, Peter, James, Philip, Nathaniel, calling them by name. He's the shepherd who knows his sheep. And he wants you to enjoy the fellowship of the flock. You say, I'm in that fellowship, I'm saved. That's good if you're saved. And in a big sense, you are in the fellowship. That's good. But there is a local fellowship. And it's not grace puts you into that primarily. It is obedience to his word and response to his call. Grace has put me into that great flock, that church which is his body. Grace alone has put me into that. But then I hear his voice. I read his word. He's calling me to a fellowship local, a house local. As a young believer, I had great trouble defining the house of God. I didn't know exactly what it was. Was every believer in the house? Some told me they were, some told me they weren't. And I had a bit of trouble defining the house of God. One evening I was standing with a group of young brethren. We were arguing. The audacity of it. We who didn't know, we were arguing as to what the house of God was. And a dear brother came along and we told him what we were arguing about. He said, look, see that little man over there walking across there? He said, he'll tell you what the house of God is. And he called him over. A remarkable little man, a phenomenal man, known to some in our gathering this evening, now with the Lord. Remarkable man. Who treated deep things very casually. He says, the house of God. He said, what you should be concerned about is, does your assembly have house of God character? We said, what is that? He said, tell me, why does a man have a house anyway? There are three reasons why a man has a house. He has a house to live in. He has a house where he rules. He has a house which is his, where he rests after labor. He said, if you like alliteration, it's where a man resides, where he rules, and where he rests. He said, make sure that your assembly has this character, that he resides there, that he rules there, that he rests there. That is the house, locally, and that is the flock, locally. If you're looking for the fellowship of the flock, you shouldn't really find it very difficult if you're serious about it. May the Lord guide you. Well, she still is not very clear on what they say to her. They say, if thou know not, O thou fairest among women, they say, go thy way by the footsteps of the flock. And if you follow the footsteps of the flock, you'll come to the shepherd. You'll find the shepherd if you find the footsteps of the flock. How he led his people, his flock of the Old Testament, and he does the same with us. He led them out of Egypt. He brought them over the Red Sea by the death and by the blood of the Lamb. And then through the wilderness he led them. And then he brought them over the Red Sea and eventually over the Jordan. But he brought them over the Red Sea, out of Egypt. He brought them for salvation. And over the Red Sea, he brought them out and cut them off from Egypt that they left. The Red Sea cut them up. We heard that yesterday. The Red Sea was the great dividing between the people of God and Egypt. It's like baptism, Paul says. Now, here's a problem. You're looking for the footsteps of the flock. You're looking for the shepherd. And you come to this early stage as you follow the footsteps, this matter of baptism. And you stick here. When they pointed out baptism to me as a young believer, this is what they warned me. And I believe now it's true. They said, look, when once you see that you ought to be baptized and you don't obey, you'll stay there. But when you obey that, you can move on. There won't be any more progress if you reject what light has been given to you from the Word. It's principle. If you want to know, then do. And those that do his will shall know. So he brought them out of Egypt. He cut them off by the Red Sea. He led them in the wilderness. He was in their midst with all their problems, with all their troubles and all their backslidings. He was there, making them an unique people, set apart and sanctified to himself. They were his people. Balaam said some lovely things about them. Those early men who left John Baptist, they said, Master, where dwellest thou? He said, come and see. Where did he dwell? We're not told. Not there in the context. It was a nameless place. And in the nameless place they stayed with him. They'd found the shepherd. He says, come and see. And he led them to the nameless place. He'll lead you to a nameless place yet, if you hear his voice and follow him. Because the assembly is that nameless place. Oh, we're gathered to a name, his name. But in ourselves, we have no denominational status. We don't want one. He is here in the midst, and in this nameless place, we are happy with him. The footsteps of the flock will bring you there. And you know what you'll find when you get there? You'll find, like with Israel, that there are Levites to serve. There are priests to worship. There are princes to rule, and there are prophets to guide. And all these in the assembly. I wouldn't put up with one clergyman if I were you, when you could be in the assembly with all of these gifts in abundance. There are riches here, which so many know nothing about. Everything that the flock needs is here in the scripturally ordered assembly, with the shepherd in the midst. So you say, there isn't one man there? No. What about the feeding of the flock, the food of the flock? Well, the local assembly is well fed. When it is well ordered, it is well fed. When the shepherd himself was here, he fed them personally. Those lovely scenes in Galilee and Judea, where he's walking along the road and this little company about him, and he calls them his little flock. Fear not, little flock, he said. And by the way, what a mixing of metaphors is this? Fear not, little flock. It is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. A flock with a father and the prospects of a kingdom. There's a great mixture of metaphors, if ever there was one. But it's all delightfully true. Little flock, he calls them. And you can picture them walking along tranquil scenes they were, listening to his voice, hearing his parables, listening to him as he taught them and fed them, walking the road sometimes, sometimes in the garden, sometimes on the slopes of the mountain, sometimes by the lake shore, and his little flock about them, and he fed them personally. Those were delightful days. But don't think that we have missed anything because we didn't live in those days. Oh no. Because you see, there was a kind of a relationship then between the shepherd and his flock. They called him rabbi, they called him master, teacher, and they were his disciples. And the Gospels, full of this word disciple. But when you come to the Acts of the Apostles, it is obvious that the word is beginning to be phased out. And when you come to the epistles, you don't find it at all. Disciples abounding in the Gospels. Not so many in the Acts, and none in the epistles. Why is the word phased out? We're living in a different era, with a different relationship. We love him who was, when he was on earth, the shepherd with his little flock. But he's in the glory now. And it's not a rabbi-disciple relationship anymore. It's a risen head, a risen Christ, and the Spirit of God with us. You say, how does he feed the flock now? He's the chief shepherd. And he's got under-shepherds. And the under-shepherds, for him, they feed the flock. Here is a great privilege. And a very, very heavy responsibility too, to be allowed to feed the flock. We have seen that there is in John 21 a very basic requirement, a basic, a requisite for any man who aspires to feed the flock. He says, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? And if we have love for the shepherd, then we love the sheep. There are lambs to be fed. There are sheep to be tended. And sheep to be fed. That is the order in John 21. Feed my lambs. Shepherd my sheep. Feed my sheep. Now he does not say, segregate my lambs. Separate my lambs. No, no, no. Isn't it nice during these April, May days to see the lambs in the field with the sheep, with the ewes, and to see them feeding together? Some of the little ones, they can't feed quite properly yet, and you see them still dependent upon the mother. And she's happy to feed them, but you'll see them trying, nibbling at the grass. But in all that I have seen, I have never seen a flock of lambs. I see them mingling with these sheep. I see them with them. And in the one field, sheep and lambs, they feed together. Nice to see the young people with us. They don't need segregation. Positively dangerous thing to segregate them. It's not a kind thing. But at the same time, we remember that there are lambs in every congregation, and we must remember that and help. But at the same time, if there is ministry which seems to be too big, too high maybe, for the young believer, isn't it good to see that young believer stretching, exercising, stretching after the thing that seems to be too high? That's good for the young believer. But those who cater for young people's gatherings, they don't give ministry like that. It's ministry brought down. and ministry that is up there to be reached after is better, with a little bit here and there specially for the lambs that are young. Now in every assembly, we have those that are elders, we have those that are overseers, and we have those that are shepherds. Same man, very often, may be described in this threefold way. But sometimes there is a predominance of one characteristic or another in that brother. Elders, mature men. And these mature men, we talk about them tomorrow, God willing. But these mature men are apt to teach. Doesn't mean that they're public teachers. But if you've got a problem, you can go to that dear brother. He's an elder, he'll be mature, and he'll help you. But then there are other men, and the predominant characteristic is that they are overseers. They're sort of watching over the flock, watching to see what is happening, and watching to see who needs help, watching for the straying lamb. And then there are others who are shepherds, in the real sense, with a great big pastoral heart, feeling for and loving the saints. These things might overlap, but they refer always to these men in the flock locally that will feed the flock. And Peter says to them, I appeal to you, he says, to you elders, I appeal, who am also an elder. And he gives reasons then. He says, feed the flock of God which is among you. Feed the flock. How much the flock needs to be fed today. His word, exposition, systematic exposition, we're in great need of it. Telling us what the passage means, expounding it, bringing it out, the accurate, literal meaning of the word. We need this systematic exposition, an opening up of Romans, an opening up of Hebrews, a bringing out of this these great truths of the word. We need that. We have men that can do that. We need men who can tell us the difference between children and sons, the difference between atonement and redemption, the difference between justification and reconciliation, men who can teach us, and in teaching us they are feeding us, and we are growing. And then, of course, we need so much ministry about the shepherd himself that will tell us about his personal glory, about his moral glory, about his official glory, that will tell us about himself in all that he is, in all that he has become, in all that he will do for us now. We need so much a ministry that will exalt him, that will make him real to us, that will draw us closer to him and send us away feeling that we want to serve him better and to love him more. Tell me, she says, where thou feedest, where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon. If thou knowest not, O thou fairest among women, go thy way, follow the footsteps of the flock. You'll find him. You'll find him there, the flock, the footsteps of the flock, the food of the flock. And somehow, if we make much of the shepherd of the sheep, everything else likely will fall into place. May we be able to sing it truly. I have a shepherd, one I love so well. May the Lord bless you.